You're listening to EAA Radio. I'm Magneto Mel, and we are sitting here today with three of our deaf pilots, and actually, you're part of the Deaf Pilot Association, aren't you, Mike? We've got Mike Boland, Rusty Reagan, and Greg Lawrence, and all of you guys are licensed certified pilots, and Rusty is actually a flight instructor, instrument rated. Greg is an instructor working on your certified flight instructor for gliders, correct?
Correct.
So why don't we tell us a little bit about your aviation experience?
I'm Greg.
Okay.
I started flying when I was 16. My father had to drive me to the airport for my introductory $5 flight and earned my private pilot's license in 1966. Have about 3,000 hours flying. Came to AirVenture in 2009.
But that wasn't your first one, correct?
No. My first one was 67. I went to Rockford in a Waco. And I had lived aboard a boat for 5 years and not flying, and then came to be in the author's corner in 2009 and discovered light sport and that I could be a light sport instructor, and took the written test, and been a challenge finding an airplane to fly for the rest of it. And just recently kind of shifted gears to CFIG for gliders.
And now, were you born deaf, or?
I lost my hearing as an infant, and it wasn't. My grandmother taught me to voice very well.
Obviously, yes.
And she was born in Germany, and it was very important to her, and taught me to voice very well. And it wasn't discovered that I'm deaf until I was in eighth grade. And, in fact, that's what I told the doctor for my first medical for my student pilot's license. Because I could voice well, they had told me you have a slight hearing loss when it was really severe. Told the doctor, slight hearing loss, I don't know what to put on the form here. And the doctor said, well, you do fine, don't make trouble for yourself. And it was 35 years later, the FAA sent me a SOTA.
Okay, now, SOTA. Yeah.
Statement of Demonstrated Ability.
And you received that after there's the medical flight test. And then,
mine was administrative because I had already been flying for 35 years, and I didn't ask for it. They just didn't know what else to do with me.
So that's pretty unique.
And sent me an administrative SOTA. So, I didn't have to fly for it.
You didn't have to fly for it.
No.
Now, Rusty, you had to fly and do the medical flight test to get your
SOTA.
SOTA. So can you tell people a little bit about what that is?
SOTA is a disability. If you have any kind of disability, no matter what it is, before you take your flight exam with a DPE, you have to demonstrate a STAR, most of which I remember. And once you do that, they give you this little waiver you put to keep in your wallet all the time.
Looks and kind of the same as a medical certificate, right?
Yeah, kind of like that.
Yeah.
And just a waiver with a number on it, and then you go ahead and take your flight test with the DPE, and that's pretty much it.
Okay, now, you have your instrument rated.
Yeah.
Okay, so how did that examination go? I mean, first of all, how does a flight work?
Okay.
Like that, so.
The instrument thing, I was trying to get for a long time, because if you wanted to get your CFI, you had to have your instrument. Even, it doesn't matter if it's not current or not.
Well, and the commercial's a little bit.
Yeah. Well, we've had the commercial for a long time before.
But it's very limited without the instrument.
You could do band of towing, craft casting, towing gliding, stuff like that, but you were limited up to 50 miles taking passages and stuff. So finally, I got my instrument, and then after that, I got my CFIA right away, and started teaching tail dragging on the weekends and so on.
Do you have a lot of deaf students?
No, hearing, mostly hearing. I took him for deaf people, but mostly hearing. And I'm mostly a tail dragger pilot because I've done a lot of bandit towing the last 11 years, off and on. And also I'm an aircraft mechanic.
So I know for the private pilot test, you do your demonstrations. You can use the SOTA, and you don't have to, you know, work with ATC. But for an instrument, you have to talk to ATC.
Correct.
So how does that instrument test work?
It's pretty simple. And since I'm PIC, but I'm required to have another instrument pilot with me. So if I'm flying any plane requiring IFR, the person next to me has to do the radio for me, and I do the flying. That's basically what it is.
So
you fly, I fly, you talk.
So in your examination, in your flight test, did the examiner sit next to you and act as that SIC, or did they sit in the back
and evaluate?
So they acted as SIC for the examination?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, where I did my exam, it was in an uncontrolled communication area. So he just gave me, he wrote down what he wanted me to do before I took off and put the hood over me. And I did my instrument check right and went out pretty good.
And I think there are now, three or four instrument rated?
Yeah, about that. About
deaf
that.
Pilots?
Yeah.
And, and Mike, now you're an A&P for American Airlines. And so what got you started flying?
I started flying in 1978 when I was just out of high school. And I got my license in 1983.
And you got a SOTA the same as Rusty?
I have a SOTA the same as Rusty.
Okay, are you just private pilot?
A private pilot.
And then A&P.
A&P mechanic.
And if anybody, whoever wants to answer this, tell me a little bit about the flight training for deaf pilots. I mean, there's still the flight training.
You just teach them, if a deaf person's going to learn to fly, you treat them like you're going to teach a hearing person, but let them know what you're going to do before you fly. Not in the air, because it makes it complicated. Try to demonstrate in the classroom, okay, we're going to do this and that for 1 hour, and then go out and play and do it, and then come back, talk about what you did, and then go on to the next thing.
Yeah, that's very similar with hearing pilots, too. You want to talk about things on the ground when you're not moving.
Yeah.
So
no changes.
A year ago, Kirby Ortega with Cessna was preparing me for my practical test for CFI's F, and had me writing lesson plans. And I wrote lesson plans that require no oral communication in a cockpit with a deaf person, ASL. We establish classifiers for everything before we fly. Classifiers are not officially assigned, but they're what he and I would agree to mean something. And we go down the list of common errors and establish classifiers for everything, and we don't have to voice in the cockpit. The other thing is, I see my instructor here and at Sun and Fun twice a year, and we talk, and he first said to me, "Greg, you seem to understand more than other people in the airplane."
And he's hearing.
He's hearing, yeah. And I said, "Yeah, that's because I read lips better than other people in the airplane."
So,
when you can communicate with a deaf person to teach them to fly, you can communicate with more than half the flight students today who are using English as a second language.
Right, yeah. And now you do a lot of teaching of the ground school over the internet, right?
Or correct.
With the video phone. Right.
Deaf people go fly with their instructor and
with their hearing instructor.
Hearing instructors, and can't understand what the instructor is explaining to them. And call me on the video phone when they get home, and I explain. Okay. It's been wonderful. I have about 20 students all over the country doing that.
All deaf.
All deaf. And over the video phone. And I have then used voice phone or VRS to talk with their instructor. And it's been amazing what the instructor has been trying to say in English. I explain it in ASL. The instructor winds up understanding it better.
Very quickly, probably, because
it's so
spatial.
Right.
And so, now that you've gotten your CFI and the instrument rating, I mean, how has that changed your flying from just the private?
I fly more.
So and are you enjoying the lack of restrictions?
Yeah, it's one barrel out of the way. And it really made a bit different. Now I can go out on the weekends and have fun flying a champ or a tracery cub and teach some people to fly a tail dragger and get them signed off for Deutschman on it. And it's fun.
We need to talk about that because I need my tail wheel.
Yeah.
So call one of me. These days, yeah. Call you on the phone.
Well, text me, I'm deaf.
So, and then now you are just now, you're getting your CFI for the glider, and then what do you want to do with that?
Well, now that I've aligned myself with Pipistrel, the intent is to... I have a list of 40 deaf schools across the country that I intend to visit and do the You Can Fly presentation. That's going to be the forum presentation here Saturday. And along with that... visit with the flight schools in that area, and primarily I see my function as teaching instructors
to
work with deaf and other people who use English as a second language. Because the PTS, the practical test standards, is simultaneously demonstrate and explain. And it will not work with people struggling to process language.
Yep.
They're not
going
to fly and process that much language at the same time.
Well,
so it's a big adjustment for people to make.
Right. Well, we're out of time.
Okay.
But I know you wrote a book, so if you can tell the name of that and people can come find it.
The name of the book is How It Works.
And that's over there in the author's corner?
Not this year.
Not this year. Okay. They can find it.
Yeah.
Okay. And also, just to mention, the Deaf Pilot Association and some others are trying to get together to possibly do a tribute flight for the Cal Rogers 1911 Transcontinental. A lot of people don't know Cal Rogers was deaf, so I guess that's another thing going on. So, all right. Well, thank you very much for being here. This is Greg Lawrence and Rusty Reagan and Mike Bolin representing Deaf Pilots. And you're listening to EAA Radio.